Think we are live, perhaps? Maybe not. Oh, there we go. All right. Well, hello, everybody. I'm just waiting for YouTube to catch up here. There we go. All right. So, I will wait just a minute or two and let people hop on. If you are joining us online, whether on YouTube or Facebook or the website, why don't you let us know? Type your comment or a hello or I'm watching in the comment section so then I know who's watching, and that kind of helps bridge the weird technological gap here. Oh, good evening, Lori, tuning in on Facebook. Thanks for joining us. I'm excited for tonight. It's going to be good to just keep kind of plowing through the book of Genesis. So, this is week 7. Oh, David and Ann are on Facebook, and Vicky is on Facebook. Good to see you guys on there. Hey, Megan. So, yes, we are in week 7 of our study in the book of Genesis. And so tonight we are going to be looking at the 5th chapter, Genesis chapter 5. And so we've been studying this first book of the Bible. Genesis literally means beginning or origins. And really, Genesis is the first book of the law. So if you think of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, those are the 5 books of the law. And so Genesis is the first book of the law. And really what it's meant to do is lay some groundwork for answering kind of worldview type questions. Worldview questions like, you know, how did we get here? What is the purpose of life? Where did everything come from? Why is there evil in the world? Like, those are kind of questions that help you make a worldview, which, you know, it's straightforward. It's your view of the world. And so Genesis is doing that originally for the Israelites, right? Every ancient culture had a creation narrative of some kind answering those types of worldview questions, which is why when you study Genesis, you'll notice, yes, there are parallels between the Genesis account and creation narratives in Babylon or Egypt or Assyria, like all of these ancient creation narratives where there's gods and conflicts and all that kind of stuff. There's parallels, right? Many of them have a flood account. Many of them have different similarities. But what we've seen as we've gone through Genesis is Genesis stands alone in a lot of ways. There's so much in Genesis that is very unique to the biblical worldview, right? I'll just give you one. In every other ancient worldview, there are multiple gods, and there's some type of conflict that exists that leads to the creation of different things in the universe. And so Genesis 1 shows that there's only one God, and there is no conflict. There's just literally God speaking things into existence. So right away you go, man, that is so different than every other creation narrative. There's no conflict. God's not vying for power in the universe. There is literally one God, right? And he is powerful enough to just create everything by speaking things into existence. So last week we looked at chapter 4. Hi, Suzanne, and hi, Kathy. Thanks for joining us online. Last week, we looked at Genesis chapter 4, which was broken up into a couple of different sections. The first section dealt with the very well-known story of Cain and Abel, the two brothers, right, born to Adam and Eve. And it recorded the first murder in human history. Cain murders his brother Abel because God accepted Abel's sacrifice but didn't show any regard for Cain's sacrifice. And we kind of walked through why, perhaps. But Cain murders his brother Abel, and then God pronounces this curse on him. But then even in the midst of that, right, God says that you're going to be a fugitive, you're going to be a wanderer, and Cain says, this is greater than I can bear, someone's going to kill me. And so even in the midst of that, God shows Cain grace that he doesn't deserve. He puts a mark on Cain saying, no one will touch you now, and so on. And then the next section of chapter 4 showed the family lineage of Cain leading up to a man named Lamech, a man who took two wives, right? The first case of polygamy, took two wives, and then he actually brags to his wives about murdering someone, taking revenge against someone. So what we see in chapter 4 is humanity falling into more and more and more sin. But chapter 4 ends with Adam and Eve having another son named Seth, right? And so Eve says, God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel. And so Seth is born, and so there's this glimmer of hope that another son is born. And then the very last verse in chapter 4 is, at that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So there's this glimmer of hope, right? We see all throughout chapter 4, humanity's going downhill, essentially. But then there's this hope at the end. People are starting to call on the name of the Lord. Now, chapter 5, our passage tonight, is strictly a genealogy. And it chronicles the genealogy, the family line from Adam to Noah. And so for most of us, if you have studied the Bible at all, for most of us, we don't consider genealogies the most exciting parts of the Bible, if we're honest, right? A lot of times our eyes might glaze over, and it feels like we're reading a list of names that are hard to pronounce. If you've ever read the book of Numbers, which is, they're doing a census and they're taking down names and the sons of so-and-so, and it can feel kind of like, man, oh man, these are just names of hard to pronounce people. But genealogies actually serve a massive purpose in the Bible, and they're quite important. First off, a genealogy roots the biblical text in history, because what it's saying is these are real men and women who lived, not made-up stories. These are not fictional characters. By giving a genealogy of, father, son, it's rooting it in actual history. Specifically, in the book of Genesis, especially in these early chapters, genealogies actually serve two functions: to establish continuity, for the audience, and they serve to jump the timeline ahead a little bit. And so, right, it establishes continuity, but then what you're going to notice is that the timeline is going to jump ahead quite a bit. Much is being skipped over in chapter 5. Like hundreds of years is just being kind of skimmed over, because think about it. We have the timeline from Adam to Noah, which is like even over 1,000 years of human history. And it's just kind of skipped over by going, Adam was the father of so-and-so, and so-and-so is the father of so-and-so, all the way up to Noah. So think about that. 1,000 years of human history. So that would be like someone writing from the year 1021 to 2021 and simply giving here's a summary of 1,000 years, just giving names. We would go, well, what happened, right? Because you've skipped over a lot of human history. But this is why genealogies are in the book of Genesis, because it's meant to push the narrative along for the reader, right, and get to some of the important worldview stories to help shape the Israelites' understanding of who God is. Now, the structure of these first 11 chapters of Genesis is quite amazing, because it kind of bounces back and forth between narrative and genealogy. So you have, you know, in chapter 1, verse 1, all the way to chapter 4, verse 16, that's all narrative, right? Creation story, the fall, Cain and Abel. And then you have from 4:17 all the way till 5:32, which is where we'll go to tonight. That's genealogy. And we saw that last week, right? Cain was the father of so-and-so. We're going to see that. Then after that, you've got chapter 6, verse 1, all the way to chapter 9, verse 28, which switches back to narrative, which is the story of the flood, right? Noah and the flood. And then in chapter 10, verse 1, all the way to verse 32, you have a genealogy again. These are, you know, the sons of Noah, and it goes through the genealogy that way. And then you have chapter 11, verse 1 to 9, which switches back to narrative, which is the Tower of Babel. And then you have the very end of chapter 11, verses 10 to 32, which switches back to genealogy. So there's quite a beautiful structure to these first 11 chapters. It just kind of goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, right? Narrative, and then it gives a genealogy to kind of skip the story ahead a little bit, and then it goes back to narrative and it gives the story, and then it switches to genealogy and it kind of rushes the story ahead, because literally, like, in the first 11 chapters of Genesis, we're covering like 2,000 years of human history. So it rushes through it by using this kind of method, you know, just giving the names of generations to move the narrative on a little bit. So it's quite interesting. So what I'm gonna do tonight is I'm gonna read chapter 5, and then we'll just kind of unpack it a little bit. There are some really cool things in this genealogy which I don't want us to miss. And then I'm actually gonna try, as we go through, to map it out a little bit for us, because for me, I'm visual, and it's good to kind of see this lineage, right, from Adam to Noah. I thought about making coffee because we've been having issues with our oldest daughter sleeping. So I remember when we were doing Revelation, I told people that people were like, man, he's yawning. And I said, it's not because I'm bored. It's because our son won't sleep through the night and we're up all night with him. And then we finally... And those of you with kids can tell me if this is normal. We finally got Oliver to sleep through the night, and now our oldest, for the last going on 2 weeks, has just been giving us issues at night and refusing to sleep. And is that normal, everyone? I've heard from a few people like, hey, welcome to parenting. It's normal. So if I yawn tonight, that's why. We've switched from the youngest giving us grief at night to our oldest, Lucy, giving us grief at night. So, Genesis 5, verses 1 to 32. This is what it says. This is the book of the generations of Adam. When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Male and female, he created them, and he blessed them and named them man when they were created. When Adam had lived 130 years, he fathered a son in his own likeness after his image and named him Seth. The days of Adam after he fathered Seth were 800 years, and he had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days that Adam lived were 930 years, and he died. When Seth had lived 105 years, he fathered Enosh. Seth lived after he fathered Enosh 807 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Seth were 912 years, and he died. When Enosh had lived 90 years, he fathered Kenan. Enosh lived after he fathered Kenan 815 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Enosh were 905 years, and he died. When Kenan had lived 70 years, he fathered Mahalalel. Kenan lived after he fathered Mahalalel 840 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of Kenan were 910 years, and he died. When Mahalalel had lived 65 years, he fathered Jared. Mahalalel lived after he fathered Jared 830 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Mahalalel were 895 years, and he died. When Jared had lived 162 years, he fathered Enoch. Jared lived after he fathered Enoch 800 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. When Enoch had lived 65 years, he fathered Methuselah. Enoch walked with God after he fathered Methuselah 300 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Enoch were 365 years. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. So that's interesting. When Methuselah had lived 187 years, he fathered Lamech. Methuselah lived after he fathered Lamech 782 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and he died. When Lamech had lived 182 years, he fathered a son and called his name Noah, saying, "Out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring us relief from our work and from the painful toil of our hands." Lamech lived after he fathered Noah 595 years and had other sons and daughters. Thus all the days of Lamech were 777 years, and he died. After Noah was 500 years old, Noah fathered Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So already you may have noticed a couple of things from this chapter, besides some of the interesting names. You'll probably have noticed the pattern, right? There's a very set pattern in this genealogy. It goes something like this. You know, when so-and-so had lived X number of years, he fathered so-and-so. You know, so-and-so lived X number of years after he fathered so-and-so, had other sons and daughters. Thus, all the days of so-and-so were, you know, X number of years after which he died. That pattern is repeated many times in chapter 5, right? It just follows the same kind of pattern. Now, this form of a genealogy is what is called a linear genealogy, meaning it only lists one member from each generation. And so that doesn't mean that each father only had one son. I mean, it says multiple times, you know, he had other sons and daughters. So it doesn't mean that, like, there was only one son born, but a linear genealogy just lists one member from each generation to show the connection between, you know, Adam and Noah, for instance. And it actually doesn't even necessarily mean that it's listing the firstborn each time. It's just listing one person from that generation. Now, the other thing you may have noticed was how crazy long people lived. I mean, Adam was 930 years. That is a long time. Can you imagine having someone that was born like in the 1100s, right? Born in the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, and being alive today? Like that's insane, right? Adam lived 930 years. Seth lived 912 years. Enosh is 905 years. Methuselah, the oldest person to ever live, was 969 years old. So people, different scholars have tried to explain that, well, maybe we shouldn't take their ages at face value. Because right in our human minds, we go, people living almost 1,000 years, that seems crazy to me. Right? That just doesn't, yeah, someone born in the year 1,000 being alive today, we just go like, that doesn't compute. And so scholars have said, well, maybe we shouldn't take that number at face value. Some have said, well, maybe the numbers are symbolic, and maybe they relate to various astronomical periods. Maybe the numbers, some scholars say, are encoded with honorary significance. Maybe the numbers, some scholars have said, are calculated by a different numeric method. Like they have said, well, maybe ancient people, maybe for them, right, it's not like, you know, 1 year equals 1 year for us. Maybe we're supposed to kind of see it as, well, maybe they had a different system. Maybe it's like 25 years for them equals 1 year for us or something like that. And so there's different ways that scholars have tried to say, or explain away how long people were living. However, there is just no convincing explanation besides the fact that people just lived longer. Now, later on, for sure, right, in the biblical text, we're going to see that human life stabilizes what we would call a normal lifespan, right? Psalm 90, verse 10 says, "The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80, yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are gone too soon, and we fly away." So even later on the Psalms, the psalmist says, "The years of our life are 70, maybe 80, right? So we see it get to a more what we would call normal lifespan. And as you go through the biblical text, the effects of sin are taking more and more effect because people live significantly shorter lives. The fact, and this is really interesting, the fact that lifespans diminish radically after the flood is the Bible's way of saying that, hey, history is actually regressing rather than advancing. Like, you would think, right, if humanity was advancing, like the evolutionary worldview, right, that we're just getting better and better and better, you would think that Adam would have lived way less, and over time, human beings would live longer and longer and longer lives, but the opposite is true. Human beings are regressing rather than advancing. Adam lived 930 years, and now I think the oldest person on the earth is 123 or something like that, close to that, or 120. And we view that as like, that's unbelievably old. So humanity is not advancing when it comes to age, at least. So verse 1 says this: "This is the book of the generations of Adam." That's a really interesting phrase, but we're actually going to come back to that at the end. And then it says, "When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God, male and female, he created them. And he blessed them and named them man when they were created." All that kind of first verse is doing, verses 1 and 2, it's simply connecting this genealogy with the creation and fall of mankind. The creation narrative is actually repeated here a little bit, right? If you remember Genesis 1, verses 26 to 28, it talks about the creation of mankind. God said, "Let's make man in our image, after our likeness, let them have dominion." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And that's kind of repeated in verse 1. When God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Male and female, he created them. He blessed them and named them. So this verse 1 and 2 is just connecting us. It's anchoring us back in the creation account, right? Harking back to Genesis 1. So then verse 3, it says this: "Adam lived 130 years. So I'm going to try my best to kind of draw this out for you a little bit as best I can. So you have Adam, and he lives 130 years, and then he has a son named Seth. And I'm actually going to draw three. Seth is Adam's third son. You got Cain, Abel, and we know that Abel was murdered. And then you have Seth, a son in his own likeness after his own image." So similar language to when, you know, God created human beings after his likeness, after his image. A son is born to Adam after his likeness, in his image. And so then we're told that Adam fathered Seth. He lived 800 more years. He had other sons and daughters, and all the days of Adam were 930 years, and he died. I'm going to try and write. I just saw on the screen, it's not quite big enough. So there we got Seth. And we're told that Adam has other sons and daughters, right, that aren't named, that we don't really know about. All we're told about is Seth in this text. And so verse 3 ends by saying, or sorry, rather, verse 5 ends by saying, "And he died." Now, we might not think much of that, but those three words are very significant because it's pointing back to Genesis 2:17. "And remember what God said to the man, 'But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die.'" God told the first human beings, "If you disobey me, you will die." And they didn't right away. right? Which is significant. Adam lived 930 years, but we're told he died. Death inevitably came for Adam. This is the penalty of sin, and God is not a liar. God told them, if you eat, you will die. And so verse 5 is really important because it says, and Adam died. So Seth, we are introduced to this line, this genealogy in chapter 5, what it's doing is it's providing an alternative to the generations that are linked to Cain in chapter 4, right? And we could do that, right? We can, if we wanted to. And I'm not just for sake of time and space, but in chapter 4, we saw, you know, the lineage of Cain, right? And had all these different names. And so what chapter 5 is doing is giving us an alternative lineage. Cain's line leads to a killer named Lamech, right? If you remember last week. Seth's line leads to a man who walked with God named Enoch. And so what chapters 4 and 5 are doing is they're comparing and contrasting these two lines that came from Adam. So we're told that Seth lives 105 years. He fathers a man named Enosh. And he lives till he's 912. Seth has other sons and daughters. Then we're told Enosh has a son named Kenan. So there's his son. And Enosh lives till he's 905. And we know Enosh had other sons and daughters as well. Kenan, next in line, has a son named Mahalalel, which is a fun name. If you know people who are having a baby and they need a good name, it's Mahalalel. And Kenan has other sons and daughters. So you can see already, right? And think about the amount of time they lived. Like how many, and we talked about this last week, how many babies could you have if you lived to be 900 years old? And I quoted it last week, and I'm not going to get it correctly, but the record for the number of babies born to one couple is 60-something. And so you think about, okay, in a span of that short amount of time, one couple could have 60 babies. How many babies could these men and their wives have? And so what you have is the population of Earth is just exponentially growing. So you have Mahalalel, he lives 65 years, and then he fathers a man named Jared. Right, and Mahalalel has other sons and daughters, and Mahalalel lives till he's 895. And then Jared lives 162 years, and he fathers a man named Enoch. Oh man, my writing is bad. And then Jared has other sons and daughters, and so you have Enoch. And so Enoch is really interesting. When you get to Enoch, something really fascinating happens that kind of breaks this pattern, right, of the previous six generations. It says Enoch lived 65 years and he fathered Methuselah. So I'm going to kind of loop back up here. So then you have Methuselah. That's Enoch's son. And then it said Enoch walked with God after he fathered Methuselah 300 years. Thus, all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And then look at this, verse 24. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Now, that is interesting. Enoch lived 365 years, and then God took him. And it's a very similar end. Similar kind of wording as what happened to Elijah in 2 Kings chapter 2. If you remember, Elijah and Elisha are walking together. And then it says, "And as they still went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elijah saw it, and he cried, 'My father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen,' and he saw him no more." So Elijah was a man that, you know, this chariot of fire comes down, and this whirlwind takes Elijah up into heaven. Elijah never died. And same with Enoch. Enoch walked with God, and then God took him. Now, you and I, we're left with a ton of mystery and questions with Enoch. We're not told how God took him, what it looked like. We're not told why God did this. We only know Enoch walked with God. And why would God take him after only 365 years, which is a relatively short life compared to others in this genealogy? And so the phrase he walked with God is also used of one other person, Noah, in Genesis chapter 6, verse 9. It says that Noah was a man who walked with God. He was blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. So that phrase of someone walking with God is used of Noah and of Enoch. Now, some people think, scholars, that that phrase walked with God means that Enoch received all sorts of special revelation about writing and astronomy and secret knowledge that nobody else knew about. Even the book Jubilees from the 2nd century B.C. speaks about this. It talks about, you know, Enoch receiving all of this secret knowledge. The Jewish expositor Razi, who lived from 1040 B.C. to 1105 B.C., he said that Enoch was a pious but a very weak person and easily tempted, so God took him away early on in his life. So for that Jewish expositor, he says, well, the reason that God took Enoch was because he was weak and he was easily tempted, so God just kind of took him before he could slip up. Even in the Book of Wisdom, in the fourth chapter of the Book of Wisdom, it says, he was taken away in order that the evil would not change his heart and temptations would not deceive him. So different, like, extra-biblical ancient writing gives all these ideas of why Enoch was taken by God into heaven. But listen, the truth of the matter is we're not told any of this. It's a complete mystery. But that phrase, walking with God, it's meant to show us a religious and moral attitude. A life that is spent in spiritual communion with God, but we're not told why God took Enoch, and that kind of adds to this mystery about it. Then Methuselah, who is Enoch's son, lives 187 years, and he fathers a man named Lamech. And then Methuselah has other sons and daughters, right? So, and we get to Lamech. Now, here's what's interesting. Methuselah is the oldest person who ever lived, 969 years old. And what's interesting is that the longest living human doesn't reach 1,000 years. And you might be wondering, well, why is that so interesting? In Psalm 90, verse 4, it says this, "For 1,000 years are in your sight, are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night." So the psalmist says 1,000 years are like a day for God. So I think, on one hand, okay, it's interesting, Methuselah doesn't break the 1,000 barrier as far as years old. But I think it's one more illustration of this book, Genesis, refusing to grant God-like status to humans. Right, it's just a subtle thing that, you know, 1,000 years is like a day for God, and the longest a human ever lived didn't even crack that. Right, I think it's just one more reference to, you know, humans are not God, right, and they never will be. Oh, hello, Babaram, watching on Facebook. Glad that you could watch with us. So, We're told that Lamech lives 182 years, fathers a son, and now we've got to Noah. So you can see it's a terrible genealogy, but you see we have now spanned like 1,000 years of human history in less than one chapter of the Bible, which is super interesting. And so Lamech says this when Noah is born. He says, out of the ground that the Lord has cursed, this one shall bring us relief from our work and from the painful toil of our hands. So Lamech lives another 595 years for a total of 777 years. So here's a couple of interesting things about Lamech. Notice that in both lineages, right, so you've got the three sons that we know about born to Adam. You have Cain, Abel's murdered. Seth is chapter 5. Cain, we looked at chapter 4, and it ends with what? A man named Lamech. So both chapters 4 and 5, you're introduced to a person named Lamech. Different people, right? But it's very interesting. And the two Lamechs could not be more different. In chapter 4, Lamech from the line of Cain speaks threats. And in chapter 5, the Lamech from the line of Seth speaks hope and faith. In chapter 4, the Lamech from the line of Cain embraces human's descent into sin, departure from God. In chapter 5, the Lamech from Cain's line bemoans sin and the curse, and he looks for the gracious act of God. In chapter 4, the Lamech from Cain's line talks about 70-fold, right? If Cain's vengeance is 7-fold, then Lamech's is 77-fold, which literally means 70 and 7. And then in chapter 5, Lamech's age is so interesting because it's 777 years, literally 70 and 7 years and 700 years. So there's all of this interesting wordplay going on and comparison between Cain's line and Seth's line and Lamech in chapter 4 and Lamech in chapter 5. So chapters 4 and 5 are very intentional on ending with a figure named Lamech, but with very stark differences, right? And now the other interesting thing is that Lamech names his son Noah and says, this one shall bring us relief. But here's what's kind of odd. The name Noah in Hebrew, it doesn't mean relief. Noah means rest. So a couple of theories about what Lamech said. Some scholars think, well, maybe Lamech saw the possibility that Noah would be like a second creation. Maybe Lamech's words were kind of a cry of desperation for some kind of relief, right? We need relief. We need rest from all of our work and painful toil. And to be sure, Noah does kind of represent a new start. Like, we're going to get into the story of the flood and the ark and then how God spares Noah. So for sure, Noah does represent kind of a new start. One scholar I read thought Lamech could have been under the impression that the curse of sin would remain in force only during the lifetime of Adam. And so the scholar kind of made this interesting case that maybe people thought that original curse of sin was connected to Adam and Eve. And so Adam lives to be 930 years old, and Noah was born after Adam had died. Like, if you calculate the years up and overlap, Noah is born 1,056 years after creation. And Adam lives to be 930 years old. So Noah was the generation after Adam had died. And so Noah is the first person in this genealogy after Adam is dead. And so maybe Lamech thought that the curse that was spoken to Adam would come to an end with Adam's death. And that's why he says, right, out of the ground the Lord has cursed, this one will bring us relief from our work and from the painful toil? Perhaps. So this chapter ends with, after Noah was 500 years old, he fathered three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then it ends. And so this chapter ends with the prominent figures for the next narrative, right? It's setting it up because Noah and his three sons are going to are gonna play into this next chapter in a really big way. So last thing that is amazing about this chapter, if you remember, I said I was going to come back to it. Chapter 5, I know these are kind of shorter studies, but that's okay. Oh, hello, Ramesh. Ramesh is watching on YouTube. We're just nearing the end, so you may have to jump back and watch it again, but glad, thanks for joining us. So one last thing that is amazing about this chapter, the chapter 5 begins in verse 1. It says, this is the book of the generations of Adam. That's a really interesting phrase because nowhere else in the book of Genesis is that phrase used. This is the book of the generations of Adam. Elsewhere in Genesis, when it comes to genealogy, all it says is these are the generations of so-and-so. So for instance, Genesis 10 verse 1, it says these are the generations of the sons of Noah. Genesis 11 verse 10 says these are the generations of Shem. But chapter 5, verse 1 specifically says, this is the book of the generations of Adam. This is the book of the generations. It's such an odd phrase. And do you know the only other place in the Bible that that phrase is used is Matthew 1, 1. So when you get to the New Testament, the first gospel, it says, the book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. Or literally, the book of the generations of Jesus Christ. So think about that. What is Genesis 1 and Matthew 1 doing? Right? Genesis 5 and Matthew 1 doing. Genesis 5 says, this is the book of the generations of Adam. And Matthew 1 says, this is the book of the generations of Jesus. So this is amazing. Really, what Genesis and Matthew are doing is saying there's two options. There are two family lines. You're either in Adam or you are in Christ. Those are the two options, right? Even 1 Corinthians 15:22 says this, for as in Adam all die, so also in Christ shall all be made alive. So I think the fact that in Genesis 5 it says, you know, the book of the generations of Adam, that's not just a weird happenstance because every other genealogy doesn't say that in Genesis. I think already the Spirit of God is telling us in Genesis 5, it's setting up the narrative of sin and redemption. Because really, the rest of the Old Testament tells us the story of all who are in Adam, right? Under the curse of sin. And then the gospel comes in Matthew 1:1, and here is the book of the generations of Jesus, right, the one who's going to come save us from the curse of sin. So there's this beautiful setup already in Genesis 5 that something amazing is coming later down the line. So even though it's a genealogy, right, and like I said at the beginning, sometimes genealogies are like hard to get through. There's a few things in Genesis 5 that are just so interesting, right, that Enoch is mentioned and that Lamech is mentioned in both Genesis 4 and 5, and then setting up the arrival of Jesus. It's quite amazing. Babaram says, Pastor Andrew, I came to know your dad is also pastor of some church, so I'm waiting to listen to his preaching as well. Yes, my dad is a pastor in Souk, which is on the island in BC, Souk Baptist Church. So yes, you should check out his preaching. Everything I learned about preaching, I learned from him. Not everything, but a lot of it, because I grew up listening to my dad preach every week. So hopefully that's been interesting to you and helpful. Next week is going to be really interesting because we are getting into chapter 6, which talks about The sons of God taking the daughters of men, and the Nephilim are on the earth, and it just gets into some crazy stuff, which is quite interesting. So make sure you tune back in next week for that, and we'll answer some hard questions about a really odd passage of Scripture. So hopefully that's been helpful to you. Oh, Megan says, did God limit our lifespan to 120 years? Really good question. Because in Genesis chapter 6, it says this. When man, and so we'll jump in, but we'll answer this more next week. But it says, the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were attractive. They took them as their wives. Then the Lord said, my spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. There's debate about that, actually, because some scholars have said, okay, yeah, that's God limiting all human life to 120 years. But the issue is that there have been people that have made it past 120 years. So you go, well, wait a second. But if God said that I'm limiting humans' days, then how come there are a few people who have lived past that? And then some scholars have said, no, God's speaking specifically to those people because of the rampant sin before the flood. He limits human life. So we'll get more into that next week when we hit that verse. But that's a really good question with some debate around that. Because it is interesting when you look at people who, there are people who have lived, I think it's 123 is the oldest anyone has ever lived. I read that this week, actually. And so you go, well, that's interesting. How can someone live past what God says he's putting a limit on? So is it for all humans, or is it just at that time when corruption on the earth was just so awful? And specifically, is he limiting it because of the Nephilim and these creature like giants, right, that were living on the earth? So we'll get into that, right? So next week, Nephilim, giants, demons, it's going to be awesome. So make sure you tune back in. So thanks for joining me tonight, and hopefully that's been helpful, and we will talk to you next week.